This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink, inspiring public curiosity about food. Learn more at MOFAD.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. Today, we sit down with the culinary concierge, Maisie Wilhelm, to talk about her new endeavor, Palatine. It is your friend on the inside when it comes to all things food. We talk about her insider knowledge about traveling the world in search of the best bites, and what it was like to work for one of the masters, Chef Danielle Boulud. It was a treat, an absolute pleasure to hear what she is working on, and a real dream job for anyone who loves food. We also dig deep into the archives, one of our favorite interviews with some of our favorite jokes, and a live session from She Keeps Bees. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. We are here with Maisie Wilhelm. Nailed it. First try. founder, COO, CFO, CEO, C-level
of
Palatine International Culinary Concierge and Consulting.
You got it.
I got it, right?
Yeah.
Now, for a woman who's of international notoriety, you started as a Midwest girl.
I did. I still am a Midwest girl.
Hard forever. Cheese curds?
No, that's Wisconsin.
You're from Michigan.
Yeah, I'm more pasties.
Pasties.
Meat pies.
Oh, yeah. It's funny.
And cherries, really.
It's funny because Midwest people are really specific about their specific regional dish, as you just showed me.
Yes.
But you grew up in the Midwest.
Yes.
Mom cooked, dad cooked, food was a big thing or not a big thing at all?
Not a big thing. My parents separated when I was 8 and mom was a single mom and went back to school. So it was like, put the chicken in the oven when you get home from school at 3:50. There were Pop-Tarts, there were Kraft singles in the house.
Sure.
Wonder Bread. So I didn't really get into food until I was a little bit older, but I did have an uncle who was and is a restaurateur in Southern California.
Interesting.
And so when we would visit on the holidays, we would have filet mignon and fancy things like that. So I was exposed to that at a young age.
But the concept of working in food was
far from my purview.
But you went abroad pretty early in life, though.
Yes.
You went to Tuscany.
I did.
Were you at a villa under the Tuscan sun?
No, although I had seen Stealing Beauty and did fantasize that that would be my experience.
Ooh, that Liv Tyler, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Those are some experiences in that movie.
Yes. Yeah, there are. And it was a little bit like that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But not quite as exciting.
But what drew you to Italy? What made you want to go abroad, especially from growing up in the Midwest?
Yeah. Well, I actually attribute a lot of it to a fantastic middle school Latin teacher I had. Ooh. Mrs. Pedley, who's still around.
Shout out
to Magistra Pedley. My mother, who is a linguistics major, made my brother and me each take 2 years of Latin in middle school.
Ooh.
And
for SAT purposes?
No, I think she just knew that for any language we would want to study after, it would really help.
Yeah.
And it did. My brother and I both went on to study French and Italian. And my brother also speaks Russian, so we're a big language family. And I loved ancient Roman archaeology. I loved ancient Roman culture. I thought I wanted to be a classical archaeologist. So I was big into the whole peninsula. And so I started to take Italian when I was 16 in high school.
It's amazing what things you take in high school that follow you through life.
Well, yeah, yeah. And I went to a public high school that allowed us to really build our own education.
Yeah.
So there wasn't Italian offered at my high school, but I was a 10-minute walk from the University of Michigan campus, and I marched up there and I asked the professor if I could audit the class and just sit in and get it for high school credit.
And so with basic college understanding of Italian,
yes.
You traipsed off to Italy. And what was that like going there? What were your experiences? Was it a mind expanding, blowing experience?
Yes. I won a scholarship, and I spent a month studying in Siena,
mm-hmm.
living with a family and going to language classes at a school there that attracted international students of Italian. So there was no English spoken in the classroom, which was essential. It was like you ask what a word meant, and they described it in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a wonderful, eye-opening experience. I really recommend people to spend time abroad whenever they can. It's incredible for personal growth, and it shows you a new side of a culture, a world, a set of foods, all of that, which was incredible to see.
What was eating like?
Eating, I was a student, so eating was a lot of pizza al taglio,
mm-hmm.
Which was fantastic. I still have my favorite place in Siena where I'd like to go. and then, you know, mostly it was like cheap wine and riding Vespas through the countryside.
Mm. Sounds good today.
Sounds good, yeah. And then I hooked up with a family in Puglia, in mm-hmm. the heel of the boot, where hardly anybody still goes there to this
right.
day, but back then nobody had even heard of it, it felt. And I was an au pair for this family.
Mm.
And I traveled down, you know, overnight by bus to the very tip of the heel of the boot.
Okay.
Very remote area where I lived with a family and spoke English to their 12-year-old, and it was like paradise.
Were you responsible for the cooking?
No, not at all. They had, it was like the grandparents were there,
yeah.
they were retired. They had an unmarried aunt who milked the cows every morning and brought the fresh milk in to have our cafe latte. They had orange trees they would take the oranges from and juice them for their, you know, morning spremuta. They raised almost all of their own fruits and vegetables. They had their own table wine, their own table olive oil, all from their products. The only thing they really needed to buy or trade services for were fish and meat.
Mm.
So it was a paradise. I've spent a lot of time with that family. It's actually, if you've read Gabrielle Hamilton's Blood, Butter, Bones
yeah.
memoir, the experience I had with a family in Puglia is very similar to the experience she had with her in-laws in Italy.
Got it.
So,
is this when food started creeping in?
Yes.
So when did you start to, because this is the early 2000s,
yeah.
and food, obviously, especially food media or brands or concierge, came way later.
Yes, yeah.
But when did you start thinking that maybe you wanted to write about food, work in food, just somehow be involved with food?
Not until So I basically got bitten by the European bug.
Sure.
And wanted to pursue studies that would keep me on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up majoring in Italian in college, and I did a junior year abroad in Bologna, Italy, and then stayed the summer after and lived in Rome. And it was in Bologna where I really started to have that sort of awakening of food.
Now, what was it about it? What...
Partly it was convenience, because sure. the Italian university system doesn't require you to attend classes.
Beautiful.
They give you the syllabus at the beginning of the year. They say, come back in 3 months, and we'll give you one oral exam and base your entire grade on that.
Wow.
So a lot of kids...
But you could go to the classes.
You could, yeah.
Did you go to the classes?
I mostly did, and that meant that I didn't have to study, like, two or three of the books on the syllabus, because that's what they covered in lecture.
Sure.
But that meant there was a lot of free time to roam around the city, mm-hmm. explore the markets, cook with our Italian roommates, learn their family recipes. My roommate came from Abruzzo, and her family owned a pasta-making store.
Sure, as one does.
And so she would bring back, every time she'd go home, she'd bring back a suitcase full of food, which is also typical among Italians. They have two suitcases. One is all of their food and toiletries, and then the other is, like, pasta fatta a casa, you know, jars of the canned sugo, like everything.
Mm.
My Italian homestay family sent me home with a liter of olive oil, with a torta, you know, just bags of fresh pasta, all of that. So,
I mean, just a real travel.
Yes.
And then from Italy, mm-hmm. you went to Paris.
Yes. Yeah, so,
which is the other delicious capital. I feel like. Yeah. Between France and Italy, it doesn't get much better in Europe for eating. I mean, Spain.
I've been lucky.
They're all good.
They're all good.
They're all good. They're all the good. But those two.
These are tent poles.
But to go from Italy then to Paris is incredible. And what drew you there? What were you doing? Were you furthering your career in food?
So, no, I was still kind of in an exploratory period.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated college. I had thought I wanted to be a diplomat, and so I actually interned.
How does one go about thinking they want to be a diplomat?
Well, I had learned about the Foreign Service, and
sure.
it sounded romantic to me, the idea that you could live all over the world and learn different languages and have that be sponsored, essentially, by your career. And so I interned with the State Department when I was in college. That was why I was in Rome. And I fell in love with Rome, but I did not enjoy working for the government.
Mm.
And when I graduated, I thought, you know, I had visited friends in Paris while I was living there. And so I said, I want to learn French the way I know Italian. And I want to feel comfortable in Paris the way I felt extremely comfortable and familiar in Italy. And so with a semi-useless degree in Italian studies and no intention of using it.
I mean, not completely useless.
Well, it turned out not to be,
Yes, in the long run. You never know.
But, right, so I just packed up and I moved to Paris.
As one does. Where'd you live?
Why not? I lived in the 16th arrondissement, which is a super snoozy, hoity-toity neighborhood where I saw lots of old women, bad plastic surgery, and miniature dogs.
So sort of like the Upper East.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I rented a cheap room.
I think we just lost our two listeners on the Upper East Side. Sorry.
No offense.
I
had a friend in college, an acquaintance whose father was French and had this apartment and rented me a room, and I lived with her two brothers. And that man used to come home with incredible game he had caught for his children, basically. He would pheasant hunt on his property in Normandy.
As one does.
And then he would come home with, like, dead birds stuffed into plastic bags in the fridge that, you know, the fridge was packed once, and I opened the door, and then this bird springs out, the feathers fly in my face. I'd screamed. but I had never seen a dead bird with feathers in the refrigerator before.
Now, the great thing about all these different little villages in Paris is that it sort of has everything. It has your butcher. It has your cafe.
Yeah.
It has your cheese.
Fromagerie. Yeah.
And so what are you learning about food? What are you putting sort of into your arsenal at that time?
When I first started in Paris, nothing, because I was panicked to learn French. I didn't speak a word when
I mean, they're
I got
snooty there.
There.
They're real. Well, the thing is that probably the difference between Italy and France, is especially Paris, mm-hmm. is that in Italy, maybe they'll speak to you in Italian. In Paris, especially, once they start hearing that, they go, English.
Yes. Well, and I learned a lot about the etiquette of the French people and Parisians, which are kind of a different breed.
Sure.
One thing that really surprised me is that they are extremely polite. Mm-hmm. And if you walk into a store, a taxi cab, you know, a room, you must greet the people there. And if you don't, you're considered very rude,
yeah,
and they will give you attitude back. And
yep,
so my theory is that Americans have such a negative view of French being, you know, snooty,
hoity-toity,
because they have offended the French without even realizing it. You
yeah
know, how many times do you go into CVS and you say, "Bonjour, madame," you know, zero. We just don't do that here.
No.
But so I moved to Paris thinking I would write a novel in a smoky cafe.
Sure.
Get any old job to support myself in the meantime. Be poor, because
that's
if
what
you
got
to be poor, why not eat baguettes with incredible butter and do it in gorgeous Paris?
I mean, there's still a euro today.
Right.
So
1.15.
1.15.
Yes.
It's gone up
barely
a little.
Yeah, yeah. But the French government does regulate the price.
They do regulate
of
it.
Bread.
They do.
And I got really lucky because the any old job quote that I ended up getting was at the International Herald Tribune.
Amazing.
Which still had headquarters in Paris at the time. And I was a news assistant hired with a visa and everything. One of the last to get that.
The last gasp
yeah
of real journalism.
I think there was one after me. And then now they just hire
you. And so you just learned the city. You took it in. You
yeah
learned the people. You
bit
learned the
by
food.
Bit, I learned French. I had a job as a news assistant there that was a liaison between the English-speaking editorial staff and the French-speaking production staff.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about your move to New York, and we're going to talk about how you've put all these pieces of your life together to create what is an incredible business at Palatine, the, can I say first? I'll say
sure
first type of creative concierge.
I think so.
Culinary consulting, creative services. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on Heritage Radio Network. Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here with Maisie Wilhelm, CEO, CFO, COO.
Founder.
Can we say the E and E for eating?
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. That's a free one. A Palatine, culinary concierge, yes. Connecting creative services. Yes. So you've done Italy.
Yeah.
You've done France, Paris.
Mm-hmm.
What did the siren sounds of sweet New York City sound to you? Why did that call to you? What made you want to come back stateside when you had done what is one of the hardest things to do, which is set yourself up in Europe?
Well, partly it was necessity. The visa that I had in France did expire.
Jerks.
I may have overstayed a little bit.
It's okay. No one listened to the show, so it's fine.
But my papers ran out, and I'd been there for 3 years, which was 2 years longer than I imagined I would stay.
Wow.
And by then I learned a decent amount of French, and I was in journalism, working at a newspaper. I had published a handful of clips and thought, why don't I try this? So I moved to New York because I'd always wanted to live in New York City, dreamt about it. My big brother was there. He was like, come, it's so much fun.
You got to live in New York once in your life.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not true. Actually, that's what I used to think before I lived in New York, and then I said, you only should live in New York if you really want to live in New York because you gotta want it.
Certain types of people can excel there, and it's just not for everybody.
It's not, and that's fine.
It's a hustle.
It's a hustle, and it was living there that taught me that my original thinking was naive.
Flawed. Mm-hmm.
That's life. Yeah, you just learn your previous thinking is flawed. So you get to New York.
Yes.
And you were still doing some editing stuff.
Yeah, but I was in journalism for a bit.
But what I want to talk about is how I met you was when you were working for Danielle.
Yes, Danielle Ballou.
Does he need a last name?
Let's give him one.
Fine, Danielle Ballou.
D. Biggity,
which is what everyone calls him.
He knows it.
How did that happen? And also, how did the job of a brand manager happen for him?
So I was tired of journalism slash the economy, well, the industry had tanked.
2009, 2010.
This is 2009, yeah.
It was bad.
It was a terrible year.
It was a terrible year to work in media.
And I was kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to the drawing board. I could be a personal assistant to somebody. I actually had done this essentially in Paris. My last job at the IHT was to assist Susie Menkes, who was a world-renowned top fashion editor.
Are we talking like Devil Wears Prada?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Exactly that kind of job. I thought, okay, through Susie, I met everybody who was anybody in that field, and I learned a lot quickly about that industry. So I thought, okay, I could do that again for somebody who's a mover or a shaker in their field, or something in food, maybe. I mean, this was mid to end 2009, and suddenly the idea of working in food was around.
Palpable.
Without being a chef or working front of house.
Yeah.
I thought I was saying, like, I'll look for something behind the scenes in the food world, like, I don't know, a back office somewhere.
Yeah.
So there I am searching on Craigslist for personal assistant jobs, and up pops personal assistant to Chef Danielle Ballou.
Which, you know, today, good luck.
No way. They don't do that anymore.
But back then,
the
concept of being a personal assistant to a chef.
Where do you post for that job? How do you find somebody?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got lucky. I mean, the skills.
What was that interview like? Did you interview with him?
Not immediately. That was the final interview. It was like I went through.
Oh, he was the final boss?
Yes.
The final boss in the
basically,
video.
Yeah, everybody. I met with. First, I sent off my resume, and 4 hours later, I had a call from HR, and I thought that was a great sign.
Yeah.
And I heard that I was one of the first people to send in an application, and, you know, the next day they had 100 of those. But my skill set was actually perfectly suited to the job because I had just come from this experience in a high-paced, high-stress, intense experience of a newspaper room where there is a nightly deadline, and you're working with the French production staff and the English editorial staff, and I was the liaison to make sure everything came out okay. And then in the kitchen, it's the same way, right? It's a nightly dinner service.
Sure.
And everything's amped up, and you've got VIPs in the dining room, and so it just was a good fit.
And so what did the job, what you got it entail?
So I like to fluff it up and say it was managing Danielle's strategic use of time.
Sure.
But I was scheduling him and handling his correspondence and helping him stay on top of all of the things he had to do. And bit by bit, I got really familiar with that. He is a phenomenal business person and chef and manager and leader, and extremely energetic and never likes to say no or not do things he wants to do. So it was very difficult to juggle everything, keep him on time, get everything done, and deal with, you know, the whims of a strong personality.
Well, not to mention food's rise in popularity, mm-hmm. and him becoming a celebrity,
yeah.
outside of the food world during the time you worked for him.
Yes, yeah. So I ended up doing 3.5 years as his personal assistant. And the last year and a half, 2 years of that was really great because I grew a lot. I had, you know, gotten down pat the duties of the assistant and was able to take on a lot more for him and help him do more of the special projects that he wanted to do outside of the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very focused on spending a lot of time in the restaurants, but still a guy like that gets hit up all the time for interesting activities or extracurriculars. I kind of
give us one story. Give us one crazy story.
Oh my gosh.
And not the Bocuse d'Or, because
okay,
we know all that,
yeah.
stuff, but like
okay.
what's the wild?
There was one French, extremely wealthy businessman.
Okay.
Whose assistant called and said, it's his birthday, I want to create something really special. And Danielle said, oh, we'll put him in the skybox. But the skybox was booked that night.
Sure.
And it was booked by Jerry Spire,
okay.
of Tishman Spire,
yeah, yeah,
real
yeah.
estate. They own like,
everything. I think it's 93 million square feet of real estate in the
right.
world.
Right. So Danielle calls up Jerry and says, Jerry, I was going to put Monsieur So-and-so in the skybox for this special thing, but I can't because you're in it. Jerry said, I got you covered, and gave Danielle keys to the 64th floor of the Chrysler Building, which is like an empty space. I mean,
yeah.
This is the level where the gargoyles are.
Right.
So it's not the very top, but there is
It's got the gargoyles.
It's got the gargoyles. And there is a low balcony that, so the whole room, the floor is empty and it's closed. It looks like a building site. Nobody can go up there because the balcony is not to code anymore. You could easily tumble off.
Oh.
But Jerry said, you know, you can use that if you want. So Danielle catered a private dinner for Monsieur So-and-so on the balcony. And Mr. Spire even went so far as to shut off the floodlights right at the mouth of the gargoyles so that it wouldn't be too bright for the...
As one does.
The diners.
So...
So, you know, I'm helping...
Set that up.
Yes.
So you're there for a few years, and I know that you left and
yes.
went to Goldbelly.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'll tell you... Sorry.
But what I want to say is, like, what made you want to leave and what, like,
yeah.
drew you to Goldbelly? What made you want to sort of get out more into the brand
yes.
sort of facing sort of world?
So after a few and a half years of Danielle as his assistant, I said, DB, I have to grow.
Yeah.
Let me do other things.
I mean, you were there for a long time.
I was there for 7 years.
That's a long time.
Yes. I'm proud of that.
Yeah.
Not everybody makes it.
No.
And the last half of my tenure there, I handled all of those kind of bigger projects
sure.
that I was doing as his assistant and then added on a few other things as well. So, you know, Danielle had relationships with Samsung, who had a line of culinary equipment that he was one of the consultants for.
Mm-hmm.
That took him to Korea a couple times a year, and I would manage his obligations with those types of partners. And I liked that. I liked the partnership building and the client-facing relationships, and I felt I had a decent knack for that. And I did a lot of travel with Danielle. We went to Lyon, shot Tony Bourdain's Parts Unknown episode there, which was an incredible experience.
It's an incredible episode.
Thank you. I remember showing up there and meeting the fixer. I didn't know what a fixer was at the time, and he introduced himself to me and he said, "Thanks for doing my job," because you know they had told Danielle like, "Okay, what stops should we make in Lyon?" And he's like, "No, ça va, Maisie will handle it from my office."
Yeah.
So I did a lot of those kind of projects for him, but I also worked on the e-commerce part of his business, mm-hmm. which was new, through Épicerie Boulou, his retail cafe eat-in takeout place. They also were selling gift boxes online. And there was a huge market out there that we had just tapped into, and it was clear there was something going on in e-com at the mm-hmm. time.
Especially for food.
Yes. Yeah.
For especially for food that you couldn't get because you didn't live near there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I found this company called Goldbelly.
Shout out.
Shout out to Goldbelly. Goldbelly, they're still kind of in startup mode. They are an online marketplace for perishable food.
That does curation.
Yes. So Goldbelly partners with food makers.
Russ and Daughters,
Megan
by the
Lane
way,
Bakery.
The number one go-to gift, if you want to say thank you,
for
Russ
you.
And Daughters.
Which gift?
It depends on the person.
Yeah.
You know, some people are babka package.
Yes.
Some people are smoked fish.
Yes.
You know, some people are
The caviar.
I mean, I don't have enough money to thank someone with caviar. But yes.
I like the Super Heapster sandwich kit. That's fun.
It's great. Especially for those who used to live on the East Coast and now live in a bagel desert.
It's funny because I had brought on the plane a Super Heapster sandwich kit for a friend in Oakland once.
Yes. Yeah.
And now they ship it.
Yeah, it's great.
So
you're at Danielle, and you're doing e-com, and you go to Goldbelly.
Yes.
And you're blown up. But this is also the same time that Palatine starts to creep into your mind.
Yeah.
And you can see it because you have the Italian France experience.
Yes.
You have the working for people who have special requests, let's just say.
A certain level of fine-tune.
And then you also have like the curation logistics. And it's all sort of coming together. And also, you have now food as one of the biggest players in the pop culture behemoth.
You got it.
But how does the idea start?
So as soon as I left Danielle, basically, people were really curious
what you're gonna do?
What I was up to. I think there was
Maisie
a...
Watch. 2017.
I did meet a lot of people working for DB, which was an incredible experience. I feel very lucky. And I liked knowing people and getting out there and seeing what other people were up to. And the food world is so friendly and nurturing. You know,
if you're respectful.
Yeah, well, of course.
Yes.
I mean...
No, but it goes.
I thought I might be a diplomat someday, so I come correct with
respect. Yeah, in many ways, you are a diplomat, aren't you?
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, people in food, they want you to have amazing experiences. They want to give you good things to eat and drink.
Yeah.
And I nurture those friendships and connections and relationships. And so these people suddenly were coming to me and saying, hey, you're not with DB anymore. Can I hire you to do this? Or mm-hmm. have you ever done that? Or what would you think about this? And so the idea was sort of planted, gosh, maybe I could do something on my own, start my own outfit. What would I do? It wasn't clear to me, but there were a lot of things bubbling up.
How did you feel about going to work for yourself, having not really been your own employee or an employee until this point in your career?
So I was extremely ready to be in charge of my own time.
Mm-hmm.
That has been a huge motivating factor for me. I used to get so annoyed having to sit at my desk for X hours a day when I could have been doing that, you know, at home with my family on the day before Thanksgiving, let's say, or whatever. So I was interested in doing that, but otherwise, I think I was a little terrified.
Of course.
I always thought I would be the number two person.
But you're number one now.
That's just crazy to me.
So how did you launch?
So...
Because it's one thing to have the idea.
Yeah.
When did it coalesce? And how did you go about... What were the steps of launching this service, which is not... Because it's not a store.
No,
you know, it's not.
It's not
a restaurant. There's no physical door opening. How do you announce the world? I'm here. And did you want to have... Because I feel like you announced it and then you were already having a project. So did you want to make sure that you had something to say, I'm announcing it and this is what we're doing
basically,
already?
Basically, I got the idea last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I was on vacation.
Give me that year.
In Italy. This was 2017.
I do all my best thinking in Italy as well.
2017, I had a rendezvous in Bologna where I had studied abroad.
As one does.
With a number of friends, American mm-hmm. friends. We had all gathered for the wedding of a Sicilian friend of ours that we met while we were students in Bologna.
Okay.
This guy had come to school in Bologna. but he's getting married at home in Sicily. So we all, before the wedding, go to Bologna for a few days, reminiscing, reunion, and then we make our way down to Favignana for this wedding. And in Bologna, I set everybody up with a food tour. I was like, hey guys, do you want to go to Modena, meet an acciaio, go to the acciaia, let's see Parmigiano, where it's made. Everyone was game.
Yeah. I think I remember there's a shot of you in the cheese roast,
yes.
Right?
Yes. It's like heaven there.
Ah.
I coordinated this through connections that I had, and we had this incredible experience. Now, I had been to the acciaia, which is where they make traditional balsamic vinegar. Before a number of times, but my friends had never seen this. And so I had the incredibly pleasurable experience of watching people open their eyes wide when they were discovering this amazing artisanal product, this
Absolutely.
Vinegar, which you don't understand unless you go there and you taste it and you hear how the story, you hear how the food is made, you see the barrels that are from the 1800s and you taste a lot of different things. I mean, it's a really incredible experience.
That tasting is fun.
Yes, that
there's
is.
There's some strong vinegars.
Yes, there are.
Some lip puckers.
Yeah. I mean, it's the consistency of honey.
Yeah. It's amazing. It gets to be like syrup.
Yes, exactly.
And so you get bitten by this bug of just sharing this curated knowledge with people.
Yeah.
Which I have to say I love too.
Yeah.
I go, oh, you're going to the city? I got a list for you.
Here's a list.
But even better, you're like, I'm going to show you.
Yes. So that's where the idea, I mean, I literally was on the plane coming back to New York thinking how much I loved that experience.
Sure. It's amazing.
And I thought, oh, wait, this is what I love doing. Duh.
Duh.
You know, I had been kind of searching, what should I do next? Well, okay, I'll figure out how to monetize this.
And how's that? How do you go from I'll monetize it to actually monetizing it?
So I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And in Ann Arbor, there's a company called Zingerman's, which is a well-known food business. They have
Jewish deli.
It's I kind of talk to New Yorkers about it and say it's a mashup of Russ and Daughters and Murray's.
Yeah, that'd be fair.
And but they've expanded their business and now they have a mail order that kills it every year.
Goldbelly offerings.
They don't partner with Goldbelly. That's a whole other story.
That's another
podcast.
That's for after the interview. But yes, but they do. They're an international brand.
Yes, and they also run food tours.
Mm.
And I knew that they were in the nascent stages of creating a standalone business, Zingerman's Food Tours, that would be looking for more content.
Mm.
So I talked to my friends there, and I said, why don't you let me build a France trip for you. You guys take people to Europe, but you don't go to France. And they didn't because they didn't have strong connections there. But I lived in Paris. My best friend from the IHT turned out to be in food also. She runs a bakery and a cafe in Paris.
Ten Bells, right?
Yeah, Ten
Shout
Bells.
Shout out.
Shout out to Ten Bells.
Legendary.
So good. So good. It just happened. They said, great, let's do it.
That's great.
So I created an itinerary.
You created an itinerary, and how did you get the word out? How did you get people to come sign
up? So that
up?
Was all Zingerman's.
Oh, okay.
They marketed it.
By the way, to know that you're going to get a hand-guided entryway into Paris from an expert who also speaks English,
yeah,
no problem. All day.
Great. Will
right?
you come on the next one?
I will come on the next one. We'll bring little Josephine.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's the thing. So I worked with Zingerman's on this first one, which made it easy for me to launch because they handled a lot of the stuff. And I just essentially timed it right with Goldbelly, you know. And I still consult with Goldbelly and help them find incredible food-making partners. But I'm also now able to do other things as well.
Right, because you're also doing casting.
Yes.
You did casting for Final Table.
Yes, I did.
Well, I won't say the winner yet because I don't want to ruin it, but shout out.
Shout out to Netflix Final Table.
To Netflix
Table.
And to Andrew.
Yes.
And then you also are working on other projects like TV and things like that.
Yes.
And real estate deals and things like that, which seems like all of the learnings you took from DB.
You got it. I took all of those little skills and threw them at the wall. And the target is Palatine.
So how do you decide who to work with? And then also, how do you make it not about yourself? Because I feel
Great
like in
question.
These types of companies, it's like the Maisie show.
Mm-hmm.
But the success
is... No, I don't want that to be the
but
case
the success is actually being a professional number two.
Yeah, exactly. A bit stepping back so people can have their experience and that is the primary nut. I ascribe to the Tony Bourdain don't work with assholes rule.
Great rule.
So if you're my partner, that means I like you.
And so you're not an asshole.
And you're not an asshole, exactly.
What happens to the people you turn down? Now you're on the record. Now you're on the record.
No, a lot of it is timing, too. You know, what you have to...
Great dodge. Great dodge.
I told you, I was thinking about being a diplomat.
Yes, perfect diplomat. The timing just doesn't work. It has nothing to do with your attitude in that meeting.
So far I've been lucky. I haven't had to say no to much. I am hungry. I'm rebuilding. So it's like, bring it on. What's out there? And also, I'm kind of casting a wide net as I figure out where I'm focusing. I launched Palatine thinking I would focus on Italy and France because I know those cultures the best. But I've gotten requests for people to help in Maui, in Mexico, in Montreal. So I'm working all over the place right now.
Amazing. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's great to see how every little tidbit can add up to something even bigger.
Yes.
So if people want more information on it, people want to book a trip, where can they go?
They can go to palatine.co.
Okay.
You can follow me on Instagram, Maisie Wilhelm.
It's a good Instagram feed.
Or @palatine__.
Awesome. Well, thank you for making the time.
You're welcome. This has been a pleasure.
I hope to
meet your listeners.
Oh, man.
Out in the field.
It's my mom and like two other people, so it's technically listeners. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mrs. Bresnitz.
We have a song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by MOFAD, the Museum of Food and Drink. Featuring a variety of interactive displays, MOFAD encourages eaters of all ages to be curious about food. The museum currently operates MOFAD Lab, a 5,000-square-foot experimental space in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, where Chow, making the Chinese-American restaurant, is currently on show until the end of March 2019. This exhibition celebrates the birth and evolution of Chinese-American restaurants, tracing their nearly 170-year history and sparking conversations about food culture, immigration, and what it means to be American. It highlights the evolution timeline of Chinese-American restaurant menus, dating back to 1910, and also highlights a tasting section where participants get to enjoy tastings created by the country's most talented chefs who specialize in Chinese-American cuisine. Make sure you check out Chow while you still can. The exhibition closes at the end of March 2019. Check out MOFAD's tastings and extensive event calendar at mofad.org/events.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Jenna Liut, and I'm the host of Eating Matters here on HRN. Join me as I talk to food systems experts about the issues that shape our experiences of buying, cooking, and eating food. You can find Eating Matters wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
So in the studio today, we have... Yeah, see that? Yeah, now you get my full gaze. In the studio today, we got She Keeps Bees.
Hello!
Hello!
And obviously the first question on the show today
is
where?
Where? I know! As soon as we get out of this apartment, then I'll have... We only have one window that looks directly into someone else's apartment, so half the time there's no real light coming in.
Wait a second. That was not the question. The question is, where do you keep the bees?
I know. Well, we will once we have an apartment.
Oh, okay.
I forgot that. I went right in the middle.
Yeah.
Ended.
This seems like it seems like a common question.
It is. I know. And because
just so you know how the interview process goes, if you were answering the question for somebody else previously, you can't just pick it up midway for us because we didn't get that first information. So just
got it. I learned it from my mom. It's usually that's how the story goes. It's always like she's like in the middle and then he died.
Yeah. Oh, and then Mozart says to, his pizza guy. So you two just got back from recording your new record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How was that?
It was insane. It was like a dream. We had purpose every day. It was awesome. We were in the middle of the woods and
in a log cabin.
Where?
About 2 hours north of here, and it was surrounded by mountains and trees and stars and blue jays.
Blue jays.
Yeah, they're nasty little stinkers too. Apparently, they're really
good
mean.
Looking.
Oh yeah,
not the friendly Disney kind.
Yeah, no.
No, not at all.
It's like they're always hurting other birds. Yeah, it was drama every morning.
I never thought about blue jays. How was the inspiration?
We were, and amazing. Half the time it was just there's windows everywhere, so we'd try to start a song, and I just start staring off into space, and like, whoa, what are you talking about to me? Always, always. Just what you never say anything, you bastard. Just let her go, whatever.
Yeah, was she? Yeah,
no, it was amazing. It was a dream.
Was it writing and recording or just writing?
No, I had everything pretty much set up. There were only a couple times where I'm like, don't say horseshoe. What rhymes with? Oh God, wandering around looking at wood. That sounds like a good idea.
Don't say
lyric.
Horseshoe. Was another horseshoe song?
No.
Fuck. Were you completely removed from civilization, or where is it? Like
there was a diner like 5 minutes from the house.
Yeah, but we did lose power for about a day and a half, and we had to learn how to use the like old timey wood stove. Then it was like this is the test. So we burned it down. Then we had find another shelter.
Did you do a lot of cooking? What were you cooking?
Yeah, it was always
stew.
Pizzas.
Oh yeah, we made a lot of pizza.
This man, we became grandma and grandpa. I started embroidering. He started making stock for no apparent reason. It was like we were making chicken stock all the time,
just in case.
Going to sleep at 9:30 in the morning at the night, getting up at 7, being like, "Are the mountains still there?" Oh, fantastic.
that's what purpose will get you.
It was like dream. Really insane.
It's 4 o'clock. I have a glass of wine.
I will.
The sun's going down.
And it's, I know, because as soon as the sun, because it was like camping, because it was just like floor to ceiling, 24-foot ceiling.
Whose
know.
Place was this?
Well,
we found it on Craigslist.
I don't know how he did it. He's younger than me, so he's very savvy with the internet. Every time I do something on Google, it's always like, you've reached this porn place, you know, and he finds it and he's like, I got a deal, we got this, we're ready to go, they're going to give us a car for free. I'm like, what are you
That's
doing?
That's not true. They did it's not give true. Us a car.
No, but we got them to get the price down.
That's nice.
This is like a luxury house, you know, it's like.
Negotiating. Yeah, you know, I always forget that, like, there really is all these woodsy forest fancy pants stuff right outside New York.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That people never use.
And their keys are usually.
Yeah. are nowhere
are
near
nowhere.
The house.
In the house. It's actually a trick question. The front doors are just always unlocked.
Exactly.
For every half an hour you get outside, it's like a decade back. Yeah. You get 2 hours out, it's like the 1950s. No one locks their doors.
Yeah.
Only diners.
Yeah. Oh my God. One diner. So
why don't
miles.
We have you play a song?
All right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
I like the, I mean, no one could see it because this is radio, but the...
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty... Well, that guy can't.
I don't know if
but
I like
it. The B-themed shakers.
You have no idea.
They were a gift.
I'm trying not to be the bee lady, but it's happening. It's like, oh, another bee candle holder.
Awesome. I mean, you kind of... What are you going to do? You kind of ask for
I'm going to embrace tattoo. It. Totally.
Does anybody remember that episode from The Tick with that guy who had a pig for a foot and he got all these like pig presents and it was the exact same thing. It's like you get one pig
yes,
present.
It is exactly like that.
I need to watch more of that show.
Collected pigs.
Yeah. It's like, oh... Pig,
yeah.
Great, a bee dress. Actually, a bee dress would be pretty cool.
Yeah, when am I going to have that yet?
Hey, listeners.
Okay. All right.
Next She Keeps Bee Shows, bring the dress.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
All right. Maybe I'm going to do this so I don't weird myself out. I can hear myself. Okay, here we go. Don't follow me, honey. Not the road you want to be on. Yeah, the sky may seem sunny. I know I'll be the one you gotta lean on. You've got some time to spill and shine what you think you may want. See, you got the nerve, all the nerve to be so kind. Yeah, find yourself a little rabbit hole, too dark for believing in lies, lies, lies. Oh, stand up and fight, stand up and fight, stand up and fight, fight, fight. Oh, the river you damn won't dry. And the feelings you have, it's all right. Just please, sister, please give it time. 'Cause not everybody walks straight line. Straight line, 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 line. Around you, all you gonna feel is love, love. Tie the ribbon around you, all you gonna feel is love. Sing, tie the ribbon around you, all you gonna feel is love, 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 love. Around you, all you're gonna feel is love. Yeah.
Woo.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. I'm feeling a little like I can't. I got my double pants. I got three sweaters on. Sitting down in comfy chair.
Oh yeah, it's
I was like, I can't get the wall. So I'm sorry.
It's winter today.
Yeah, and I got lovely pizza all over my face.
That was great.
Yeah, we really.
What was that song called?
Ribbon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ribbon
yeah.
Horseshoe?
Ribbon Horseshoe.
Ribbon Horseshoe.
The classic.
That classic. She Keeps Me's Ribbon Horseshoe. Yeah, we really we do not set people up. We're like, come in, it's warm, and here's a bunch of pizza. Now, could you play a little something for us?
Here's some hot chocolate. Here's some hot chocolate really and good. A blanket.
Yeah, you'll be getting a back rub, and there'll be some soothing music the entire time.
Yes, please.
So now you're back in New York.
Yes, and we're frightened by every noise.
Every noise, it's scary.
We're like, what the hell is that?
Oh, did you like lost your city sense?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's coming back definitely, but we were kind of overzealous the first night that we came in. We got this Yukon, like, huge SUV
rental car to take everything back.
I've never been in a car that people were like, hey, check you out, you know. And then it was like, we look like homeless children, so it was like, yeah, daddy just buy you that, like, yeah. What? And so quickly, just trying to be as aggressive as, I mean, clearly, if you're driving a bus, like, no problem, I'll just run you over. So we dropped that off in the city, and then we're like, let's go drinking.
Oh, yeah.
No problem. We've just been going to bed at 9:30 every night. Sure, you know, and we lasted like 10 minutes.
Yeah, that first night back in New York drinking is...
And then but after moving back to New York, like, what is wrong with us?
It's either very long or very short. Almost killed you?
Yeah. Moving all of our equipment back into the house.
I didn't realize that I'm like carrying a pillow and a plant, and he's carrying like a, you know, 7 speakers.
Why are you so tired?
Yeah. Hurry up. I'm like, just need a little.
I gotta get my plan together.
Yeah, I was starting to tunnel.
I mean,
he's like, I'm just gonna lie here, and she's gonna feel so bad.
Yeah. When I come. I mean, that getting out of that New York rhythm. You know, we get older as these things happen, and getting back into it just gets a little bit harder every time. Did I really used to be out till? How did I do that?
2 hours of sleep? No. Yeah.
I have to assume that people who were my bosses did what I did when I was younger, because they definitely had to give me some grace.
Yeah.
Because there's you come and you're like, yeah, I got this. No one knows that I was out. No one's gonna notice if I go take a nap in the bathroom for an hour. And the boss is just like, could you just not? If you could just not smell like what you did last night,
like a brewery.
Yeah.
Showers are
so fun.
Yeah, I remember. I remember being hearing that phrase, smell like a brewery, when I was younger, and being like, how could you get that drunk? And then
I've never heard that.
I've never heard
that phrase before.
Really?
Yeah. That directed at you.
Yeah.
Personally.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're back in New York.
Yeah.
How long are you here before you're back on the road?
I guess for like the next couple months, we're going to be mixing and mastering and trying to get the album together by next March. And then we're just going to try to just do full push and go. Well, we're going to probably go to Europe for a little bit. But then we're going to come back.
Jaunt.
Just a
quick jaunt.
Sometimes they feed us too there. This is like one of the, actually, that's why we support this place all the time, because it's like they feed you, and you can tell that the food is made with love, and this place is amazing.
By the way, she's referencing Roberta's.
Roberta's,
you left again.
Again.
Just going to help you out here. I figured
I know.
It out.
This is what this has to do all the time.
When, what's the food like for the mixing? Is it different than the recording food?
Yeah.
Are you taking the time to make stocks, or you're like, I'm just getting any Thai takeout that...
I don't know, what were we eating, like tuna wraps the other day?
Oh yeah, we were like,
it's getting sad.
It was first
house.
It was like a tuna wrap breakfast, and then I was like, oh, do we have to do this for lunch too?
Cold tuna.
Dinner, we're going out. Dinner, we're going out.
Dinner, we're going out to buy more tuna and more wrap ingredients.
Mercury.
Yeah, you get in that studio tunnel and you're just like, first menu, whatever.
Yeah. Coffee.
I know, and now we've set up the studio just today, and like, we were listening to it in this cathedral, like, setting, and now we're just like, what? This doesn't just sound like crap!
I think it helps, though.
Yeah.
You know, smaller size. Yeah. All right, engineers.
Andrew WK actually wrote a long time ago, he did his first record, like, if it sounds good at 1, it'll sound good at 10.
Nice.
And that's how he mixes all of his records. He's the party master. Yeah.
He mixes them quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's a good idea.
Yeah, like, and a lot of, like, other producers, like, when we were starting out, the tips were, like, everything will sound good when that bass is, like, kicking, but if it sounds all right when it's really quiet. Speaking of listening to music, let's hear another song.
Okay.
That's a transition.
Right.
Boom.
Okay.
Gosh.
All right, well.
What are you going to do?
Okay, I'm frightened. But
this one's
I'm
about
gonna...
horseshoes. the horseshoe popsicle song, yes.
Is this a shaker or a tambourine?
I guess this is going to be... I'm going to attempt the brand new
Which thing
that's happening. Maybe I should just chill this. Okay. Okay, maybe I did.
Here, I'm gonna do here.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Gonna try and change it. Better know what you want. Remember how he's changed your mind before. Long as I have waited to knock the crust off you. Swirling everything around me as if I make you my moon.
That's something Andy didn't practice. Yeah, I know. And I kept telling you, are you going to do the tambo jingly?
She wouldn't let me bring my miniature drum set.
Well, because you didn't practice, man. I want a tight ship, dude.
Those are pretty interesting lyrics. What's your inspiration for...
Well, I'm not playing the next song.
That's right. You better just chill. Eat some more pizza.
You can... Yeah.
Yeah, I throw him under a bus. Throws
me under a bus every time.
We call
like,
these
give me a tambourine
house meetings.
Me to make magic. Yeah.
This is the She Keeps Bees house meeting.
Yeah.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
Some therapy. Some band
just
therapy.
Just call in. Tell me where to keep the bees, where the horseshoe song should be placed.
Oh, the bees are in the horseshoe. Spoiler alert.
Thank God we sorted this out. Oh, my nose. Excuse me. Okay.
So talk to us about the new album. Okay. It's been recorded. Yeah. You're mixing. Who's it coming out on?
We're putting it out ourselves here, and then we have a little label in the UK that's got us some European distribution. So it's just sort of going to come out in different countries, and hopefully we'll be able to tour. And then, you know, we would definitely want to do some touring of the States. Hopefully in April, maybe. I'm like, any takers? Anyone hang out with us? Yeah, show us where to eat.
So, do you just like hop in the car and just go?
Totally. I have a 92 Mazda that I've had since I was 16. It's almost classic car. We just got
a
new classic.
That's the one with seatbelts, right?
Yeah. Oh. And actually, movable seatbelts.
Oh, I forgot about those.
Yeah, where you open the door and then, one of them you have to kind of do yourself.
The motor is constantly trying to pull it back.
Actually, yeah, it's very confused. It's like,
you have one purpose in life and you are failing seatbelt.
No, please, just put me on.
What was your decision to put it out yourself here? Why that route?
I mean, I guess we're not really we're just not waiting around for, like, you know, a label, and everything that we've been doing has sort of been... sort of contracted out anyway, so I guess we were just like, what? I don't know. If somebody's interested, we want to talk. I don't know. It's also you want to be a part of a family. Like, you want to be supportive of that group, you know? And so nothing's really you know, connected that way. But I mean, we've been our sort of our own label. We put out records every year since we met, 2006,
yeah. Five.
So I swear we haven't been not doing anything. This, we just gave you a 7-inch too. We have two
with your grandma.
With my grandma and my grandpa took the picture.
Aww.
And I recreated his stamp. I found it on an old picture, and so I made that. And even though he was like such a stickler about cropping, it was always like no one is smiling in these pictures. It always took forever. You know, no one is happy. The dog is tired. Like
you're losing the sunset. You're losing the sunset. The sun is gone.
And what I've been doing is cropping the picture and putting him on record. So that's okay. That's okay. Well, doesn't have to know.
We want to thank you for coming in.
That's it.
No,
we're gonna play one more song.
I know, but we're having a good time.
I know, we're having a great
time.
Wow,
thank you for having us. I know, we're so happy to be here.
One more question. What do you eat on the road? What's your tour dietary?
We try to go to the grocery store as much as we can.
Tour? What?
On tour?
On tour. What do you eat on tour?
Oh, on tour. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We attempt to
grocery shopping. Yeah.
To eat healthy things. Like yeah. Nuts
in the
and
beginning. And then like at the end, you're like, oh, give me the
gosh darn
fries.
Fries.
Give me those fries.
It's like, I'm going to be eating alfalfa all tour. Yeah.
No, it's like
peanut butter and jelly.
Raw almonds, okay? Yeah. Well, I make a little snack pack.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is there salt on those cashews? Yeah, no, thank you. By the end, it's like, let me get that double burger.
Double burger. I want fries on the burger. I want cheese on top of it.
And deep fry an egg.
Yeah, thank you. All of it.
All of it.
I know. I don't
deep
know
fry the bun, too.
It's so funny.
I know.
They'll do that for you.
You know.
Yeah, but going to the grocery store definitely is smart, you know, because sometimes you're like, let me get a water. And you're like, I could have gone to the grocery store. It's like $1, you know, but sometimes, convenient.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's funny how it becomes less convenient.
It's amazing.
All right. And with that. Anyway, so let's do the whole laundry list of I want to find you online.
Oh, awesome. Yes. We're on FaceSpace. We're on MySpace.
My town.
What book?
Facebook. Yeah, Facebook. SheGeeksBees.com, which
needs a little help.
Yeah, it's like we have Flash going on it. I don't know why. It's like the last people on Earth.
Don't try it on your iPhone.
No, stop working. Just stop working. Yeah. And Bandcamp also. You can buy all of our albums from us.
You can
listen
to everything we've ever recorded at our Bandcamp page, which is SheKeepsBees.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, which everything we've recorded has been self-recorded.
Self-released.
Yeah, self-recorded, self-mixed, self-put out.
Yeah.
DIY.
Yeah.
And if I want to buy horseshoes, we're going to
horseshoes.
The horseshoes.
Soon, SheKeepsBees classic horseshoe songs.
And if someone wanted to send you some bee paraphernalia, they could just...
Awesome. 950 Hart Street. Let's do it.
Okay. All right.
Now we know where to really find
Come
you.
Come on down.
And we never leave it locked. So.
Yeah. The key is under the mat.
The key is in the plastic bee under the mat. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. We've
been
Finger on the Pulse. I'm glad to see that Never Forget is back to the world of living. You're going right back to the couch. I got to go back to work.
I'm going to bed.
No.
Yeah.
I got to go all the way across town. I'm going super west side.
Are you wearing double pants?
No. You know what? I it's like waist up. I'm always bundled. And then I'm like, those wear jeans.
Yeah. No.
Like, why are my thighs cold? I'm
it's
sweating.
True.
My biceps are sweating.
No, I'm
my
like...
My biceps are sweating.
Anyway.
Classic problem.
Yeah. So thank you to Whole Foods for being delicious and keeping us on air. Jack Inslee, Rec Tech, the whole Heritage family.
Awesome.
Roberta's for feeding us. Oh, my God. Pizza is the greatest... hangover cure ever. Mm-hmm. And Greg and George, our food guests. I'm excited.
Yeah.
What a day.
Yeah. What a day.
What a day.
Can't believe we did that in 1 hour.
Done.
I'm done for the day.
Yeah, you really earned it.
Bag it in.
Yeah, you really earned it. Yeah. Anyway, so last song, SheKeeps Bees, what do we have?
An old song called Cold Eye.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right.
You want any Tambo on
this? Oh, man, if you're feeling it.
I'll just lay back.
No, man, go ahead. Oh, already, you're done with your job, too.
Yeah, look at these. This half of the room is... Yeah. All right, here we go. SheKeepsBees, live on Snacky Tunes. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Yeah.
Don't you tell them what to do. Just sit yourself down. And I'll
do these things to you. Sit yourself down, tell her between us how you see right through that tall pride. That pride you got means everything to you. When I hit you on the knuckle, baby, look me dead in the eye. Watch you see it right through me too.
Tambo solo. So good.
Keep your pride. You'll find somebody else that will keep all your actions. You're doing justified.
We're gonna destroy this room, right, Andy? Ready? Okay.
Talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right-hand side of our homepage. Thanks for listening.